Hey, and welcome back to the A24 podcast. Last month, we brought together Julio Torres, the brilliant writer, director, and star of Problemista, and his good friend and producer, Emma Stone, for a truly hilarious conversation spanning their chance meeting on SNL to their present-day collaborations. We hope you enjoy the episode, and make sure to catch Problemista now in theaters.
Hi, I'm Julio Torres, and you are? Tell them who you are.
I'm Emma Stone. And this is the A24 podcast.
Let's begin. Hi, Julio.
Hi.
It's a hit.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
I'm good.
What are you doing?
What are you up to? Oh, like...
Well, we're just supposed to have a conversation that can go any which way. So I just wanted to begin with my favorite question, which is, what are you doing right now? What are you up to?
This.
Problemista
stuff, yeah.
Oh, but I mean, like, what did you do this morning?
Well, I just came back from a very impromptu trip.
Oh.
I know.
I didn't know this. Tell me more.
So, okay, I was supposed to go to Costa Rica for New Year's. This is where the story starts.
Okay. You've been there since New Year's?
No. you're like my producer would be like, you should have been working. No, I was supposed to go to Costa Rica for New Year's. I did go. I went. I landed at the airport. And then at the airport, they told me that my passport was too wrinkly. And then they escorted me on the plane right back.
Too wrinkly?
Too wrinkly.
I don't understand.
The passport was too wrinkly.
That can't possibly be true. They were using the excuse that your passport was too wrinkly? Like they couldn't tell who you were in the photo or something?
Well, it was like something with like the part that you scan. It like wasn't scanning or something.
So they thought maybe it was a fake passport?
It was very...
That is a very you situation.
It's highly wrinkly
to fly.
When they said it, I was like, oh no, yeah, of course. Like not a part of me was like shocked or like
it's like passport even that ageism. Upset,
I was like, yeah, but it was, you know what, it was very which just had like happened to me my whole life. It's like minus this many points in your worksheet because it's
too wrinkly,
it's too fucked up. Like, you did the work, but you don't care.
You did the work, but then you scrunched it into a ball and laid it out flat and did the little pirate thing on the edges with the fire.
I wish. It's always mostly like, I'm always losing things. So if I present something, I just found it.
It actually surprises me that you lose things because you love little things so much.
Oh, but see, I live with them and then I let them go.
But are you looking for them? I mean, this is getting into a different project that we'll talk about a different time. Are you losing your little things and then in a desperate search to find them? Or are you like, you know what? She's gone. And if she was meant to be mine, she'll return?
Well, there are certain things that like, with like little trinkets and things.
Yeah. Because you have so many little trinkets.
I lose them and then I think I had a great time with them. And then someone will find them and be very happy, I hope.
And they'll have a great time too.
And they'll have a great time
too. Then they'll lose them and someone else will.
Sure.
That's beautiful.
But then when it comes to like, because I've lost my passport so many times, when I lose my passport, I'm like, oh, it'll come back somehow.
And does it?
Sometimes.
But I have fully
called like the Rockaway Beach police station asking if they found a passport on the beach.
Because you're at Rockaway Beach with your passport?
Because I'm at Rockaway Beach with my passport, yeah.
Just in case a ship goes by and you're like, take me to another country.
Well, it's my only form of ID because I never make the time to go get a New York State ID.
And you don't have a driver's license.
I don't know how to drive.
You've never driven.
I took like two classes and then I like apologized to the woman. I was like, this is just not for me.
It's not a fit. It's not a fit. We tried, but it's not a fit.
Ultimately, driving is just not for me. I didn't like the car felt like too big.
Why didn't you get like a little smart
car?
No.
I mean like in comparison to my body.
But what if you had a little smart car?
It'll still be bigger than me.
Just anything that's bigger than you, do you fly on airplanes?
Yeah, but I'm not in charge of the airplane.
Oh, so it's nice to be in it if you're not in control.
Yeah.
And that's why you decided to direct.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The psychological leap of that is really interesting.
There are things that I'm like, there are things that I do and then I think that I don't do. I do not drive. I do not eat those things. I do not do that. And it's just like, I don't know. It just makes life easier.
Do you think you have an extreme personality?
I mean, that sounds like...
I don't mean extreme in a bad way. I mean, are you like, you're all the way in or you're all the way out on things?
I think that I'm either very interested in something or completely disinterested?
Like completely apathetic. Not even hate. Just like,
no.
I literally don't care.
Yeah. Never learned how to ride a bike.
You never learned how to ride a bike?
No.
What? How did you avoid that? You just said no thank you?
I just said no thank you.
You don't like,
I've been saying no thank you my whole life. Yeah, any vehicle. I don't know how to operate any form of transportation.
That's so interesting.
But that's why I wanted to come here. Part of the reason. Here being New York.
I thought you meant here to this podcast.
Here to this podcast.
to talk about this.
That. Yeah.
You wanted to come to New York because you knew you wouldn't have to learn any form of, like, you wouldn't have to drive. You wouldn't have to take a bike.
Yeah, I mean, that you was could trust not other the reason people. I came, but that was like, I was like, I'll never learn how to drive because I'm going to go live in New York.
Can we go back a little bit to your, to the beginning of your journey, of your life? Can we go back to your birth?
It was a February 11.
Was it a rainy day? Do we know what the weather was like?
I don't know what the weather was like.
That's a good
question. Do you know what the weather was like when you were born?
No.
Scorpio?
Scorpio. But I do know it was a Sunday, and I do know that football was on, and my dad was very distracted. It's an American tale as old as time.
With the game.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, that is such a funny, like, opening montage. Like, yep, that's my dad.
Freeze
watching the game.
Going, whoa! Freeze.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, it's perfect.
He thought I was going to be a boy and a football star. Too bad. I was destined to be an actress. We should make this.
I know. We will. We will. I'll force you right after.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Okay, so we don't know what the weather was like, but we know it was February 11th.
I don't know what the weather was like.
Where are we?
We are in El Salvador, and I know that an earthquake had just hit.
Oh.
So it was a house that was like acting like a hospital.
Wow.
Because the hospital had been damaged.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's what I know.
What were you like as a baby and a young child?
I do not know what I was like as a big baby.
Oh, you were a big baby?
Big
favorite
baby. Kind. Yeah. Barely see my eyes.
Do you have the little line on your arm? This? When you bend your arm? You see this little line? I don't know if you can see that at home.
I do. I do see it. Is that because you were a big baby?
Someone told me once that the only reason that you have this is because you were a big, fat baby.
Really?
Yes, and that it like imprints itself permanently. And I don't know if that's true or not, but I always ask people when they say they had roles.
Yeah.
You know, to if they have the line. But you don't have the line.
I don't have the line.
Okay, so I guess that was disproven.
Maybe
moving on.
That was... What have they been showing me pictures of a different child?
Oh my God, the changeling.
Wait, is that what it's about?
Were you a changeling?
Wait, is that a term that exists?
Isn't a changeling like a little creep, like it exists with it? I don't know enough about a changeling.
But it's also a show or movie.
Yes, it's like but I think it's like a myth.
Oh, okay.
Like the changeling.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay.
So you as a toddler, say, personality. I'm going back because
very quiet, very well behaved. That was always the feedback from the teachers. It's like
A pleasure to have in class.
Just a delight. Just like a pleasure. So well behaved.
Why do you
really
think you
bad at the schoolwork?
But really well behaved.
Really a joy.
That's so interesting.
Says nothing.
Why did it? Was it because you were shy, or because you like really wanted to follow all the rules, or what was it?
I think I was very I know I was very shy. And yeah, have always been like so scared of rules.
Even now?
Yeah.
You feel very afraid of rules.
Yeah, like, but it depends how what you define as like, I'm thinking like literal rules. Like
yeah, not like social rules.
Yeah, not like
personality rules.
Not like, or like art rules.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, I guess that makes sense with the themes of this film.
Sure.
Okay, so just going back to you saying you knew you didn't want to be on anything with wheels or operating, it sounds like, because you're very discerning about what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah.
And you were always that way.
I was always that way.
What you were drawn to, like visually, what you wanted to do.
I didn't try pizza till I was like in my teens.
Because you didn't like the look of it?
Because I was like, no, I think it'll just be the crust for me. And then I didn't actually try the cheese part till like very late in my life. Same with a hamburger.
But now you're vegan.
Yeah, so that came and went.
That was a face.
Yeah, that was a face.
But it's nice that you tried.
Yeah, I gave it a try.
Do you try everything even though you know you're not going to like it? at some point or another, at one point or another, you're like, I know this won't be for me, but I'll take two classes to drive, or I'll get on a bike.
The taking two classes to drive was because my parents were like, no, you need to learn how to drive.
That's so funny.
And I was like, well, I tried. And it's not for me.
It's not for me. It's not a fit.
Yeah.
Okay, so then as you get older, your mother is very artistic.
Yeah.
And you were that way from the beginning. You were very inspired by...
Yeah, so she...
Shapes and colors.
She was a fashion designer, and she had a store of her designs that we lived above it. So I loved, like, sketching and loved, like, designing. And she, like, designed all the furniture in our house. Cool. And my dad was always very, like, excited to see, like, creation happen in the home.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted me, like, at one point he wanted me to be a painter. Because he's, like, it, like, loves just, like, art and creative people.
Yeah. And do you like painting and sketching still?
I really tried painting when I was way younger, but, like, that was not my talent.
What was your talent that you felt when you were younger?
I thought it was going to be just, like, more, like, globally, like, this. I thought I was going to be an architect for a while, up until, like, I was 18. I thought, like, oh, I'm going to be an architect.
You thought that all the way till 18?
Yeah.
Why architect?
Well, it was what was, like, immediately, like, available to me, and as much as, like, my mom is an architect.
Yeah.
It hadn't even occurred to me that the fact that I, like, movies meant that that was, like, a job that one could have.
Yeah.
Because then, there was no, like theater department or anything like that.
But then, okay, well, obviously so much of your work integrates that, whether it's architect, I mean, this, and also Problemista is, like, so inspired by many real life events, but you, in your comedy, in all of your work.
Oh, now I feel like I've come full circle, and I like, get to have my cake and eat it too, because I get to design and work with production designers and wardrobe designers and, like, create a visual language.
Well, my question is, so when you realize that there's this industry outside of it, like movies, you could have gone from architecture into production design, but you went into comedy. Why did comedy call to you? Like, when did that begin?
I guess you should have been my counselor. I would have been at your...
I'm happy to do it now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, yeah. That actually makes perfect sense.
You didn't go into production design. You went into comedy.
Well, I didn't know production design existed as a job. Like, I didn't really, like, understand.
So you chose comedy?
Well...
then I'll be a writer and I'll do stand-up and I'll create.
Stand-up instead. No, I did not think of doing a stand-up or comedy until, like the day before I tried it for the first time here in New York.
Okay, wait, hold on. We have to back up. We have to back up then. You decide to come to New York when you're 18?
I wanted to come to New York when I was 18. I couldn't. Multiple reasons. Reason number one is I was not a good student.
Okay.
So already it's
very, like, well behaved, but not a good student on paper.
Very well behaved.
Got it.
A delight to have around. Does not do the work.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So that immediately made it so, like, scholarships and things like that were, right, like, why would they?
Because you're adorable and delightful.
I'm a delight to be around.
There should be a scholarship for congeniality.
There should be. But I applied to the New School, and the New School admitted me. But
had you ever been out of El Salvador at this point?
Yeah. So when I was, like, way, way, way younger, I had gone to, like, Florida.
Okay.
To Miami.
Okay.
To, like...
Did you like it?
I liked it fine, but I never, like... It wasn't like a fit. Grew up, like, it was not a fit. It was not a fit. So then I was like, oh, okay, so I want to go to New York, and this one school admitted me, but I'm not getting enough money to go. Because that's the thing, because it's like, I was lucky enough to, like, I never lacked anything, but the, like, my parents didn't make, like, like, American standard wages, which is, like...
Well, to fly and move to New York and go to full university.
Well, also, just, like, the cost of school is, like...
Insane.
Yeah. And it's, like, oh, that is, like, it's hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
So then I went to advertising school in El Salvador for 2 years.
See, that makes sense as a bridge from architecture to sort of advertising.
Yeah, a little bit. So I went to advertising school, got a 2-year degree.
An associate's?
An associate's, baby. Got an associate's in advertising. And then I worked in advertising for a little bit.
What would you do?
I was, like, a very bad copywriter.
You were a copywriter? Mm-hmm. So there's some writing. No.
There's some writing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I reapplied to the new school.
Because you had made some money at this point doing that?
Very little, more than made money. I had gotten good grades at the advertising school.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Because that was more of a fit.
Because that was more of a fit, yeah.
It's visual, it's creative, yes. It's like, yeah. Makes
so
sense.
So then I applied again, and then this time they gave me like a almost like 90% scholarship. So
wow.
So I was able to make it work, and
so you're 20 or 21?
21, because I took a break. So then I was like, I came here and I was a 21-year-old freshman.
Okay.
So I translated my own transcripts.
Wow.
And just sort of made myself a junior.
Oh my God. Do they know this or are they learning this right now?
I think they might be finding out right now. Because I like
for
I,
a boy who loves the rules, I know, look at you
I
go.
I looked at like the requirements to be a junior, and it's like you should have taken like this lit class and like that thing. And I was just like,
you're like, I have an associate's.
I was like, honey, I know a little bit of Photoshop.
Wait, what were you majoring in?
It was just like an English degree. I just like really wanted to be here.
Yeah.
And then went to school for 2 years, and I thought, if I get straight A's,
yeah,
someone's going to give me a big job.
And it doesn't matter what that job is?
It doesn't matter what that job is.
Okay.
And then, like, somehow I will find a way to get into television writing.
Okay.
And I'll be a TV writer if I get good grades.
But where did that leap happen to wanting to do TV writing?
Well, by the time I was 18, I was like, I had like a teachers and a counselor being like, you know, you could, that is a job that exists, like not here, but you could go do it. And then yeah. I was like, oh, okay.
So then did you start watching, like, were there movies that you fell in love with?
No, I mean, I was already doing that. I was already like consuming the kind of work that I wanted to make. I just didn't realize that I like.
What was that? What was that kind of work that you were consuming at the time?
You know, like this is actually a question that I want to ask you again. It's like what, like during the very formative, like teen years,
yeah.
Like, what are the movies that you were like, oh, I want to do that? It was like Sofia Coppola for me. It was like...
It was? Oh, Marie Antoinette was like a...
Well, best trailer of all time.
Absolute
also.
Banger.
Yeah.
For me. I would say teen years, well, that was when I...
Were you already acting?
No, I moved to start auditioning when I was 15. So like right around that time, uh-huh. I started watching silent comedy. Like
Chaplin?
Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton. It actually was really formative. Yeah, I really loved it.
Also, not for nothing, Chaplin and Bella.
I mean, it was a pretty, it's pretty inspiring to see silent comedy when your face is made of rubber and your body's like a noodle. Because then you kind of go like, oh, I might not be super physically coordinated. I'm the furthest thing from an athlete. But if you can combine physicality and comedy.
Yeah, you're a very physical actor.
But I'm not even a very physical person. I don't even know how that syncs up other than comedically.
Well, you understand your face very well.
Oh, God, do I ever. I study day really in and day out, hours a day in the mirror.
But that is such a skill. Like, I have, like, you and, like, other, like, Tilda is, like, I feel oh like can God. Change the color of her eyes at will.
Truly. The kind of power that Tilda harnesses is unlike anything I've ever seen. It's truly
another
stunning.
Another Scorpio.
We're one day apart.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true.
Ugh, when we first met like 10 years ago, mm-hmm. we realized that we were one day apart. And, you know, every year ever since
I love that. Have
said happy birthday to each other on our respective birthdays.
I love
She's
that.
She's the best. Yeah, well, I mean, we're going to get into Problemista and Tilda Land in 1 second. But just to go back.
Yeah.
Okay. Your movies were Sofia Coppola movies. Do you like the kind of feeling that, do you like Almodovar?
Yeah, though he didn't come to me, like, I didn't start watching him till later, after my, like, Sofia, like, American indie cinema.
Who fits. Else? What else?
Oh, my God, like,
I'm just thinking, because we're on the A24 podcast, you're going to love hearing about
they're
going to
love
stuff.
Hearing about it. I mean, definitely, like, I loved Rushmore. Y Tu Mamá También, which you reference in a work.
We have to talk about that. We're going to talk about how Julio and I met.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know what movie I loved?
What?
Dogville.
Oh, my God. Dogville.
Yeah.
Yes. Incredible.
Yeah. Incredible.
Okay, like, so you've got some good...
I would, like, rewatch Dogville.
So this stuff was, like, all loading up, and you were like, I love all of this.
Yeah, there was a
I wanna be
DVD
a television
rental
writer.
Place that had like all the hits didn't come to theaters.
And like that what, was here?
No, no, no. This is in El Salvador. Oh. Me as a teenager.
It was kind of the Kim's video of El Salvador.
Yeah. And I would be like, okay, I'm going to rent four movies every time. Yeah. I'm going to rent four movies every time. One of them has to be Hollywood trash.
Great.
One of them has to be something that I had never seen or heard of, but the box seems cool.
Judging a book by its cover.
Judging a book by its cover.
Great.
Another thing has to be in black and white.
Okay.
And then the other one has to be the one that I actually want to see.
That's great. So you're forcing yourself through like an education, like these three.
Yeah. And you know what? It's like, now I understand I have OCD, but.
Ditto, kiddo.
It was like, oh yeah, no, that's that. Because I'm like, I gotta get my four movies.
I can't just get the one I actually want to see. I have to get my four. And they have to be in the category.
Exactly. But yeah. That's really, I can't do two black and white.
What a useful use of OCD.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
No, it's helped and hurt me.
For education?
Yeah.
Where does it hurt you?
Oh, like most.
Everywhere else.
Like checking the stove every time before I leave my house.
Do you have to do things in multiples? Do you have number OCD?
I used to have that as a kid. Yeah. As a kid, I would get in bed and then I'd be like, okay. Now I have to go to the kitchen, touch the refrigerator with both hands.
Oh, man.
With this side of my hands and then the other side of my hands, get back in bed, do the thing again, then come back in bed and then, like, look at the light bulb and then, like, you know when you can, like, cross your eyes so you can see double?
Yep.
Yeah. Do that with the light bulb.
Okay.
And, like, those are the eyes and then my hand is the mouth and I do four different faces and then I can fall asleep.
What would happen in your body if you didn't do that?
I could not fall asleep.
It was just like but fully anxiety.
I was an insomniac as a kid. Since I can remember, I'd go to my mom and was like, can you explain to me again how you fall asleep?
Because you just, the idea of letting go of control in that way is probably terrifying.
Yeah, I think so. I was like, can you explain sleep to me again?
And she would be like, you just close your eyes and do it?
She would usually come and sit next to me till I fell asleep.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so how many hours a night would you sleep? Are you still an insomniac?
No, not anymore.
How did you get good at sleeping? Pills?
No, not pills. Oh my God. If I take half a melatonin, I'm out.
Oh, that's lucky ducky.
Yeah, I know. I'm very lucky that way. But I don't know. I feel like the more I started doing what I like and having like liking my life more.
Yeah.
The better my sleep got.
Oh, interesting. It's almost like when you're happy, your health and life fall into place.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so weird.
It's so random.
That's so random. You're crazy.
Did you ever have sleeping problems?
Oh, God, yes. I still do. Anytime.
Does it come and go?
Oh, it definitely is like under duress or stress or any type of anxious period. It is very difficult to fall asleep. I mean, the obvious thing.
Yeah.
Or I fall asleep and then I wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning and everything feels so true. And like, you know.
When you say everything feels so true, you mean like your anxiety.
Yes.
Feel true, even
though
they're
not rooted in
reality.
In the middle of the night when the world is asleep and I wake up, It comes to me in a way that feels like I've just had a reckoning. That is, it's woken me up from sleep and I'm like, it's true. This thing you're worried about, it's happening and it's true.
That tooth will fall off.
Tooth will fall off, exactly. Yeah. And that is the worst part of the night for me when I'm anxious. It's not the falling asleep so much as the middle of the night terrors.
Yeah.
Anyway, so
my middle of the night terrors.
Just something a little cute about me. It's one of my little things. Okay, so TV writer, then comedy.
Yeah.
How did we get into this?
Okay, so then I graduated
because
from school.
Julio and I met at SNL.
Yeah.
He was a writer for SNL, so we'll get into that.
I graduated from school.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, straight A's.
Yeah, baby.
Visa, heck, citizenship, when they see these grades. here I come.
They're gonna be begging me.
And then I entered a period that inspired the period in the movie.
Yeah.
In Problemista, where I had to find a sponsor. And that was very difficult.
Did you, like, in the movie, end up working for a lawyer?
Oh,
in any way? Or were you considering working for a...
The lawyer in Laith plays Khalil.
Yes, I'm sorry. And if you're better at this than I am.
And he is a combination of two or three lawyers that I've met.
That you worked with?
One of them I worked with. And the other one was my like actual immigration lawyer. No, but actually, no. He's more inspired on one that I actually worked with.
Like that was your immigration lawyer?
No.
That you worked with, meaning you worked at an immigration...
No, sorry. Okay. He was like a workers' comp.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Lawyer.
Okay.
And I was like, I think translating.
Okay, so you were translating.
I had a few translation jobs. Yeah. Oh,
that's great.
Oh my God, I had so many jobs. So many jobs.
What jobs did you do? Are they accurate to what you see in the movie?
There are more than what you see in the movie.
What were some of your favorites that didn't make it into this? Or not favorites, but you know what I mean.
Actually, like the truly like the best working experience I ever had was being a samples person at like Fairway Supermarkets.
Oh, handing out samples?
Handing out samples.
Oh, fun.
Because it was like chocolate samples. Because no one's upset at you. You're only a plus in people's lives.
You're only a bonus.
You're only a bonus.
Here's some free chocolate.
And also no one like needs anything from you.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's like a really great point.
And you can't do it wrong.
Well, I mean, you could be a little bit too in their face with the chocolate. Like, you have to try it. No, you have to try it.
Oh, I just stood behind. I didn't say a word. I just stood behind the table.
And you never got bored. Was it interesting to meet all of these people that are just come and go and don't need anything from you and you just give them a little treat?
It was, I wouldn't say it was interesting, but it was relaxing.
That's a very nice job.
Yeah. And then my boss was out of state. So like as proof that I did it, he only asked for someone to take a picture of me behind the little table in my like little hat.
And every day.
And you got to prove that you didn't eat all the chocolate that I sent you.
How could you prove that? Just from with the picture.
Yeah, you prove it with the picture.
How do you know you didn't eat it right after?
And then you upload the picture, you email it, and then you get your check.
That's incredible.
It was great.
What was your worst job?
This is in the movie, is stopping women on the street asking if I can ask them a question about their hair.
You really did that?
And sell salon packages, yeah.
Oh my God, how many did you sell?
Zero.
Also zero.
Also zero.
He sells zero in the movie, spoiler alert.
Yeah, zero. Absolutely. And I only did it for like 2 weeks. It was just the opposite of the chocolate samples, right?
Yeah.
Because no one wants to be stopped to get sold something when they're like commuting to work.
That's very true. That like, is the opposite.
People are like living their lives. They don't want me to be like, okay, the one time that I actually successfully stopped someone and was like...
And sold a salon package?
No.
She just got into a discourse.
Because usually it's like they just walk past you. They're just like, no.
You're invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But these two, they were younger. They were like maybe like college aged. And I was like, can I ask you a question about your hair? And like, and then one of them truly goes like, sure, what's up? And I froze. I froze because it never happened before.
You never considered what the next thing would be.
Then there was a second step, and I was like, "Oh, this salon is having a promotion," and it dawned on me like, "Oh, I actually don't understand what this job is." I actually do not understand what I'm selling.
What was it, like a discount on a treatment or a service?
Clipboard that was like you would get a discount on. Like a discount for a blowout.
Okay.
But like, I mean, for example.
Sounds kind of nice.
But then it's like, you know, you'd have to give your name, your email. It's like a lot of
completely for this like $5 off a blowout.
For $5 off a blowout, yeah.
Okay. And so you never ended up getting paid from this job because you didn't sell anything.
Not a dime.
Okay. And this is all while you're trying to get sponsored.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to actually spoil who sponsors you in the movie, but how did you get sponsored eventually?
I got sponsored through a small art foundation.
Okay.
Ran by a couple of people, including a former professor, which actually good grades. We're coming back to the good grades.
Oh.
Who was like, if you ever need anything, let me know.
And you were like, I need something and I'm letting you know.
I'm like, I need something and I'm letting you know.
I need a visa right
and
now.
And he was a board member of this foundation. And then he introduced me to the person that was my boss. And then I got sponsored.
So you were working for an art foundation?
Yeah.
Okay. And then how did you get to SNL?
Well, did you not hear that I worked for an art foundation? No, I then when I felt like, okay, I feel like I figured out the important part.
Yeah. The visa.
The visa. Yeah.
And you know you get to stay here. And was it like here. A 3-year visa?
It was a 4-year visa.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, well, what do I want to do? No, actually, no. It was during the period where I was still trying to find a sponsor. I was like, well, I don't know how much longer I have here.
The hourglass.
I might fail. I might fail at this. Why am I even here? And then I was like, oh, yeah, you're here because you want to be like a TV writer and a movie writer.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I know what doesn't require me to like go to school again or know anyone or SNL. Pay anything. No, like doing stand up open mics.
Oh my God.
And then I just Googled it.
Stand-up. Oh, so this was the day before thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you decided to
I was
to
working
go-
Kochek and I was like, wait, what about stand up? And I like Googled it.
Did you have a bunch of little ideas written down, like one liners and things that you could riff on?
No,
or were
had,
you like,
I
I'll just improvise this. I'll just go to an open mic night and make things up.
No, I was like, I'll go home tonight and think of something. And then tomorrow I'm gonna
holy cow.
Do it.
Okay.
And I did it and it was horrible.
How long was your set?
It was an open mic. It was like a 5-minute set.
Were
which
you
is like
reading
very
it
generous
off of the paper?
Yes. I was reading it off of the paper. And then that sort of became my thing.
Reading it off the paper.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I love it.
And then I did a very bad job, but I liked it.
You liked the feeling?
Yeah.
Of what was it about
it?
Because I think that in terms of creative ventures, I think that stand-up comedy is the thing that scares me more than anything. It's so exposing. It's so vulnerable. It's like, this is what I think is funny, like, which is really... Like, not only do I think
like,
this
like
is funny.
It's like the feeling of showing a video to someone on your phone and
on
like waiting for them to laugh.
On a stage with
audience,
like, what do you think about what I think is funny and how I say it that I also think is funny? It's just so, it's like you're naked, emotionally
I
naked.
Never, I feel like you have, like, most people feel the way that you do.
It's
in terms of stand-up comedy.
But
I
so
never,
what was it about it?
I think that it felt like a challenge, and I felt like I was in control of it, unlike most things that were happening.
Yeah.
So I felt like, oh, this is like an interesting, fun, weird thing. And also, I've always been a very curious person.
Oh, yeah.
So like, oh, and I get to like go to different shitty bars all over New York and see like all these people who are like trying to make it in the comedy world. That just looks so interesting.
Yeah.
So then I kept doing it, and then a friend told me a stand-up competition that at the time was called NBC Stand-Up for Diversity. And you had to wait in line all night. All night. So I waited. I went on the sidewalk all night with other people. And then you'd come in. And then, like, you'd go in front of the execs. And you would do 1 minute.
NBC execs.
NBC execs.
Okay.
NBC, like, diversity execs. And then you would do, like, 1 minute. And then if they liked that, they would call you back. And then I got a call back. And then I got another call back. And then they like flew me to LA where...
It's like Star Search.
Truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I had never been in LA before. Didn't like it.
Wasn't a fit.
Was not a fit. And then I did a show there. And then I got like manager, agent stuff from
that. Off of that.
Off of that.
That's incredible.
And then I started being able to like... Because obviously all these writing jobs are so gatekept. You can't like...
Just break into...
No, it's like... So then I was able to like apply for these jobs. I applied to work at SNL. Got an interview, which was so exciting because that was like one of my first job applications.
Wow.
Got an interview. Did not get it.
Okay.
2 years later, I was asked if I wanted to audition.
Okay.
And I auditioned for it, and I
just... To be a cast member.
To be a cast member. But it was, like, a very... It was, like, a mid-season weird, like, are you actually looking for anything?
Yeah.
Or... So then I did that, and then they asked if I wanted to be a guest writer. And then I did that, and then they hired me full-time, and then I met you.
And then you met me the next day.
And then 4 weeks into the gig, I met you.
Are you serious?
Something like that.
You were not 4 weeks in then.
I mean, you
2016.
Hosted December, right?
December 2016.
Yeah. So it was like...
That was the very beginning?
I mean, that was my first half of my first year.
Oh my God. Yeah. I did not realize that.
Yeah.
No, I had no idea. That was right away.
Yeah. It was right away.
Julio wrote the brilliant Wells for Boys.
Which, I don't know if you remember this, but there's no way you're going to remember this. But I love Wells for Boys.
I love Wells for Boys.
But my heart was set in a different sketch.
The Silver?
Yes.
Of course I remember The Silver. Are you kidding me? Your direction was like, you're like Nicole Kidman in Birth. Like, it's like, I vividly remember. Yeah, you had this sketch. Wait, did it ever happen?
No.
Can we talk about it now?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, there was this, at the table read, it was The Silver Woman. So there was Wells for Boys, which is about a boy and like
which
a Fisher Price
relatable.
Well, and very, very brilliant. But there was this other, and I remember feeling so devastated because I felt like I really let you down at that table read because I was in love with the Silver Woman idea.
Oh my God.
And I was like, it was so specific the way it needed to be played. And when you're at these table reads, it's like 5 hours and you're reading like how many sketches? 50?
Like 50, 40 something.
40 something in that night. And so Julio and I had talked about this Silver Woman and he's like, she's, you know, it's really, it's like she's having like this kind of slow motion mental breakdown. Like, you know, it's like Nicole Kidman in Birth. And it's like really, you know, it was a very dramatic performance as it is in most of your work. Like this,
yeah.
I mean, like Tilda in Problemista or like in The Actress, or which is another one that we did for SNL. Like none of this is taken lightly. Like your approach to comedy is like, while it might be absurdist, the way what you're talking about, you have to believe it with your whole heart and it has to be life or death.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, so I was wrapping my mind around this and I felt like I completely butchered it and that's why we didn't get to do it. And I hope that one day we can go back and do it again.
Oh my God, we should.
But the idea was that she's like having a dinner party and she brings out her silver.
Mm-hmm. Her silverware.
And she can hear the silver.
She can hear the silver, yeah. And it's driving her insane.
It's driving her insane because when someone's taking a bite of something, she can hear the fork scream.
Yeah.
Like she can hear the pain of the ladle, you know, what they're going through in order to serve these like well-to-do people. She's deeply empathetic to her silver.
Yeah.
And I was so genius. And I just did not Kidman enough. I really didn't.
Well, I was
And
like,
I want another chance. I want another crack at Silver Woman.
But it's so funny that like, because Wells for Boys, that sketch, like people do really see themselves in it, which is why I feel like they were like, we should do this.
Mm-hmm.
But the I was like, what do you mean people are not going to see themselves?
What do you mean this isn't relatable?
Yeah.
But that was what, just to, you know, now we were so lucky to get to produce Problemista, but Dave McCary, who I know very well as well now, who directed Wells for Boys, you and Dave really bonded throughout your SNL.
Oh, yeah. No, it was like
journey.
Incredible because he directed almost everything I ever wrote there. And I got so much access to the process.
Yeah.
Especially because he's so giving that I got to like really shadow direct for.
Oh, yeah. This was all.
For a lot of it.
So yours.
Because I was just like learning so much. Because I didn't go to film school or anything. So I was just like learning so much from it to the point where I felt now that I directed a movie. It didn't feel scary.
Because you're the most integral part to that process. Also, your work is so, nobody but you can really.
Well, no, but it did feel like, I had always thought like, oh, I want to direct one day, not just yet.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel scary because I had been on set for so many times, like so many of the SNL sketches. Dave allowed me like access to like every part of it. Down to like, you know, like sound mix and color and like all those things.
So you have kind of a relationship to all of it. Well, then,
So
post SNL, Los Spookies.
And then I like show ran with my friend Anna, Los Spookies.
Right.
Which was also like almost directing, but not really. So it was like another like.
Another step into feeling like confidence to then go and run a set. And like be the full blown captain of the ship in every turn. But then you for your first film, you write it, you direct it, and you star in it all at once. And you have to direct yourself and Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Which is not a big deal at
well,
all.
Okay. So the making the movie just did not feel daunting because I sort of like won the lottery in terms of like people to do your first movie with. Because I had Dave by the monitor every single day.
Yeah.
To just sort of, you know, keep his eyes on like.
And you trust each other and you can talk about everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know, everyone who worked in that movie, and it's like.
Well, meeting Tilda, how did you?
I met Tilda on a Zoom. she got a hold of the script and she immediately was like, I want to do it. And it was just such a dream come true. And she's then the come to find that she is so collaborative and so unpretentious and so in it just because she wants to like play with you. And it really felt like, I don't even think of like quote unquote directing Tilda, but like working with Tilda felt no different than working with like my friend Spike, my friend River, my friend Anna, like people who are like my age, they like have come up with me. Like it's like, oh yeah, no, we're just like.
Because she's so easy.
It's so easy. Yeah.
And so brilliant. I mean, also your relationship in this movie is like the most important thing. And the fact that you two, I mean, I think you found so much through having that comfort with each other.
Yeah, it's so fun and collaborative. And I don't know, making the movie was such a joyful experience. Like every department was just like so happy.
What was the hardest thing about it?
The hardest thing about it? About making the movie?
Yeah. I immediately just, you're like, it's such a joyful experience. I'm like, yeah, what was hard?
Yeah, I was like, what was the worst
part? What did you hate?
Who sucked? I think that I am the worst at like everything that comes after the movie.
Like the editing process or the marketing?
No, the marketing.
The A24 podcast?
The A24 podcast. No, like the sort of like navigating the ecosystem of like, okay, now you had your fun. Now you have made a product.
Right.
How will this product be sold?
To the world at large.
To the world. And that part is like, yeah, we forget that we don't just get to go away.
Oh, yeah. After
we make something.
No, you're out there, baby. Yeah. We're going to force you to get out there.
We should be able to hire like
avatars.
Yeah.
A version of yourself that just does the like press for it. Like, in like a really concise way that where you they say what you wish you could say.
Because I feel like there are actors whose favorite part is the promotion. So if we could all get one of those.
That would be the coolest thing.
That would be incredible.
If you could hire someone who looks like you wish you could look for all of it. No, like you could really curate the experience where you're like, this is what I would like to look like on this show. And this is what I would like to say on this. Now you get out there and you do it.
You get out there.
That's a brilliant idea. That would be amazing. And then you just keep going and working and making these things. Yeah, that would be incredible. No offense, A24 podcast.
No.
We love talking about probably stuff, promise.
Like stuff like this is great because we actually get to like talk and I don't feel like I'm selling anything.
Yeah, that it's like sound bites or saying the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is nice. The reason that I think directing is so insane to me and I can't even ever imagine
you
wanting to do it. No, I really don't. I admire directors so much and people that want to direct so much because what you're talking about with all of the little decisions, every single moment of the day as a director is a little decision.
That's true.
My little problems.
Yeah.
You've got little problems all day long.
But they're so fun. And I mean, not every decision is fun. Like I'm just in post-production for this other TBD project that we will talk about a later time.
Yep.
And it was like, okay, when the washer goes off, should they VFX done or should they VFX 00? And I feel like I gave an answer, but then the question came back to me again. And then I guess I gave a different answer. And then so, of course,
this needed to be clarified.
And I was just like, I swear this is one of those things that like, it's fine.
Do whatever you want. Just do whatever you want.
Go nuts.
You have to know, I guess, where to let go of control, but then also simultaneously be so in control because it's completely yours, especially as a writer-director.
Yeah.
That, to me, seems like a brutal balance. That's why it's fun to produce that and to go like, oh, my God, you know how to do all of this. Yeah. You make this.
Well, I mean, being a director is not that different. It's like you need to find people who are excited for the project for the same reasons and who are in your same like wavelength.
Yeah.
And then those cars start moving without you.
Because you can trust them to like department heads and things like that. Trust them to bring you things because you hired them because you like what they do.
But that's not the only, because I feel like there's a lot of people who, just because we admire someone doesn't necessarily mean that we'll work well with them.
Yeah. But sometimes you don't find that out until you're already doing it.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And then you've got all those little problems all the time. Yeah, yeah.
I also like working with people who are like, I would really love to do this thing.
Yeah,
and I would I would really love to do it because I would get to do either this for the first time, which mm-hmm. is such a joy, or this show this side of myself that I don't get to do with most other jobs I take.
You mean in any department?
In any department.
But is it really fun for you in the production design world?
Yeah, I love it.
Is that, what's your favorite part of the jobs you're not fully doing? What's your favorite part to get involved in?
I think production design.
Yeah.
And then maybe second wardrobe.
You, because an architect and a fashion designer, I mean, yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. And your mom is still involved with things, right?
Yeah. I mean, I always, like, whenever I have, like, a visual design question, like, I'll ask her for advice.
Does her aesthetic, like, what she's drawn to visually mirror what you're drawn
to? Oh, for sure.
Do you think yours was inspired by hers?
Yeah, for sure. Like, very geometric.
Is her favorite color clear?
I think her favorite color currently is green.
What kind of green?
She's, I think, very in like a nature phase.
Okay. So like,
like a
true
forest green. Oh, like,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Growing up, I think it was red. Like blood a bright, red. Bright blood red.
What's your favorite color right now? I know this sounds like a generic question to most people, but with Julio, it doesn't feel generic at all. It's very meaningful. You have to understand.
I'm gravitating towards green, too, because I think I'm looking for peace.
Oh, is that your Pantone color of the year?
Yeah.
Your 2024, your February 11th color is peace.
Yeah, I think I'm looking for, like, to, like, relax.
What's your favorite trinket right now?
Well, okay, I'm wearing this charm, which is a phone. You can open it, and it's a little phone.
Where did you find that? Where do you find your...
different
things.
Like vintage little places, like flea markets, Etsy.
Hello
Etsy.
That's very precious.
Yeah,
that's a precious phone. Okay, so
we get to do cards.
We're gonna do some cards. We're gonna do some cards. Now, these were sent in, we were told that these were sent in by you at home. So the first question that they've put on our cards is, are you a problemista? Which I'm not even exactly sure what that means.
The way that I like defining it is someone who is attracted to problems or...
like Alejandro.
Yes. Or makes art inspired by problems or thrives in problems.
Thrives in chaos, kind of? Or little problems?
I think specifically problems.
Got it.
And I think I am one. Are you?
You think you are a problemista?
A problemista.
Or a person that thrives in little problems.
Yes, yeah.
No, I do not think that. That's why I don't want to direct.
Oh, sure. Yeah. You're like, no.
No.
No problem.
I like
for me.
Major
thank you.
Chaos. Then I go stoic and can get things done. But little problems, God.
Oh, okay.
Get me out of here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not asking for chaos, but you know. Oh, is chaos essential for good art?
No.
No.
This idea that art has to be difficult to be made in order for it to be good. I totally agree.
No.
Work with people you like.
Yeah.
Do projects you like.
Just have fun.
Just have fun.
Take it easy, baby. Favorite Tilda Swinton movie? Oh, God. Problemista is mine now.
Problemista, my choice. Favorite Tilda Swinton movie?
That's so hard.
You know, I think maybe like the global answer might be like, you know, like Orlando or, but I just saw, and I hadn't seen it, Technolust.
I've never seen Technolust.
She is one of many times where she plays more than one person. Oh, and that she plays clones of herself.
Ugh.
It's actually very like Powerpuff Girls coded, because one of them is like, one of them is only wearing blue, the other one's only wearing red, the other one's only wearing green or yellow, I think. And they're clones and they live in a computer.
I have heaven. To see Technolust.
Yeah.
What's your favorite childhood toy or game?
I used to put cars, like the cars that are the... do those have a name?
Like Matchbox cars?
Yeah. I used to put them in a long line and...
like dominoes?
Kinda. And then when people ask, like, what are you doing? I would say they're in traffic. They're stuck in traffic and I don't know why.
That was your favorite thing to do?
Yeah. That, and I also had, and I've been remembering this lately, where it was like, oh, that was like early directing, where I had a Little Mermaid Barbie doll. You know, the kind where you could take the tail out and then
of
like,
course,
and
yeah.
Like, oh, she was never a mermaid for me. I was like, I can't do it. I can't work with that. So she was, so she had legs. She had human legs. And I had a tattered little wedding dress that I would put her in, and I would make her walk in the dirt barefoot in the tattered wedding dress.
Oh my God.
And something happened to her. It was like, there never was a wedding. But to me, it's like, she's not Ariel. She's this like redhead actor.
She's a redhead actor in a tattered wedding dress, and she never got to the altar.
I don't think there ever was a groom. You know what I mean?
But there was a storyline happening, and it was.
She's heavy. Not well.
She was not well.
She's not well.
Did she have anything, any other accoutrement around her? No, she just was walking slowly in the dirt.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I love her.
You should play that.
I would love to. Redhead, hello. Yeah. I'm available. That sounds incredible. God, I guess we really knocked us out of the park because they're like, get out.
They're like, get out. I don't think we got to learn much from you, but that's okay.
Yeah, but it's
you know what? I'll make an FAQ page.
Okay, perfect. Let's have a follow-up entire website built to
I'll have a follow-up
just in case.
Website.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
Where I guess my answers.
It's all answers that you've guessed.
Yeah.
And it's a picture of the Barbie doll that you just talked about.
Yes.
In the dress.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Julio.
Are you kidding? Thank you. You're so busy.
I'm so glad that we have been hired as the new weekly host of the A24 podcast.
Oh my God. Well, I'll see you next week.
I'll see you next week where we cover
best shampoos on the market.
Best shampoos on the market.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
Your sponsors.
Thanks for joining us. Bye, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to our editor, Tom Wyatt, and Robot Repair, who composed our theme.